Is the coronavirus the fourth horseman of the apocalypse? Are we in the tribulation? We'll answer those questions on this week's episode of the Faith by Reason podcast. Welcome to the podcast. The website behind it all, as always, is faithbyreason.net. And this is obviously going to be a bit of a different podcast. We don't normally do current events, but we are going to take a break from our regular Bible study in order to talk about the event that is really affecting the entire world, affecting us economically and socially, and that is the coronavirus, COVID-19. And the reason that we are talking about it this week is because of, due to, again, the enormous devastating effect this has had on our lives here in America and around the world. It has prompted folks to ask me questions. They know that I have this ministry. They know that I'm a Christian and I'm a Bible teacher. And they've been asking me questions. Christians and secular folk have been asking me, is this the apocalypse? Is this, are we in the tribulation? Is this the, you know, the rider on the fourth horseman, the death due to pestilence? And so in this podcast, I want to talk about exactly what the coronavirus COVID-19 is and what it is not from a biblical standpoint. Now, I first of all want to confirm that if you do have these questions about where coronavirus stands as far as the end times are concerned, I want to assure you that these are valid questions. You are very justified in asking about this because this is unprecedented. This is nothing I've ever experienced in my lifetime or my parents' lifetime, or even my grandparents' lifetime. I think the closest equivalent you could get is maybe the Spanish flu of 100 years ago, and you know, my grandparents weren't even alive then. So we are experiencing something that we have just never experienced as not just as a nation, but as an entire planet. We've never experienced anything like this. It's wreaking havoc with us, obviously physically. People are dying, tons of people are getting sick. We are told to stay in our homes. In my state, we're on complete shutdown. We are only allowed to leave our homes for food or medicine. And it's scary. Let's be honest. This is really, really frightening stuff. You know, economically, people are losing their jobs. And I'm waiting any moment now for there to be an outbreak of violence if things don't calm down, if we don't get any type of reassurance. So it seems very apocalyptic. It seems like end of days stuff. So let's define the end times, the last days. Are we in the last days? Well, the answer to that question is absolutely, we are in the last days. But here's the thing. The last days didn't just start recently. The last days actually refer to the period of time between the death, resurrection, and ascension of Jesus until his second coming. So technically, the last days have been going on for a long time. The Apostle Paul said that he was living in the last days, and he was in the first century. So it's been 2,000 years of being in the last days. So it's obviously, the last days doesn't mean, you know, a few days or even a short period of time. It just means that period of time between Jesus' ascension and his return. So I just want to make that clear. When someone says we're living in the end times, sure, but it doesn't mean a short period of time. It simply means we're just in whatever, however long it's going to be before Jesus returns, we are in the end times. But are we in the tribulation? Is this the fourth horseman of the apocalypse? And the answer to that is a resounding no. Let me say that again. We are not in the tribulation. This is not the beginning of the tribulation. This is not the rider on the fourth horseman, death, and the fourth horseman brings about death through pestilence, among other things, diseases. And if you want to take a deeper dive into the horseman of the apocalypse, please go to to faithbyreason.net and click on the link to the tribulation, and I talk about quite a bit of all of that, everything that happens in Revelation 6 and forward. So that's what the coronavirus is not. Now, let me give you the reasons why we are not in the tribulation and why this is not the rider on the fourth horseman. First of all, this is not the tribulation. The coronavirus is not a part of the tribulation. It's not the beginning of the tribulation because it's frankly not devastating enough. I know this is going to sound weird coming based on what I've just described and what we're experiencing in our lives right now, but this is nothing compared to what the tribulation is going to be like. And this is not my opinion. The Bible speaks a lot about the tribulation, not just in Revelation, even though that's the most vivid description, but the tribulation, that seven last years of human history that we call the apocalypse, is talked about in, obviously, in Revelation. It's talked about in the book of Daniel, in the book of Joel, and actually most of the minor, so-called minor prophets in the Old Testament speak about that time. They call it the Day of the Lord. We call it the 70th week of Daniel. And it talks about the devastation, and it's going to be considerably worse than what we're going through right now. I'm not making light of what people are going through with the coronavirus, but it's going to be way worse. In fact, Jesus himself, in Matthew 23 and 24, he makes it clear that during this period of time that we call the tribulation, there has never been anything like it, nor will there ever be anything like it, meaning it's unprecedented, meaning what goes on in the tribulation is going to be worse than anything we've ever experienced. So coronavirus does not fall into that category. Why? Because as bad as it is, our planet, we have experienced worse pestilences. The coronavirus, let's just be honest. I don't want to make light of it, but it's really just a more virulent form of the respiratory flu that we get every year. The regular flu that, you know, we get every year, that people get flu shots for, if you're into that, I don't, because honestly, I just don't get the flu. I had the flu twice in my entire life, when I was 6 and also in 2002. But that regular flu kills 1 in 1,000 people. So again, thousands of people die every year from the flu that develops into pneumonia. This COVID-19 coronavirus is going to kill 3 in 1,000. Yeah, not making light. Those three people are three precious lives that are going to be lost. But in the big picture, it's not that it's 0.3% of the population is going to be affected by this. That's in the big picture, that's not a whole lot. If you look at some of the other plagues that have happened that were worse, the Spanish flu that I mentioned before was much worse. Almost 50 million people died. Between 25 and 50 million people died of the Spanish flu 100 years ago. You look at Ebola, which is just a couple decades ago, much worse than viral pneumonia. You look at the bubonic plague, several centuries ago, much more devastating. So if the coronavirus is less devastating than previous pandemics, and Jesus said that the pandemics of the tribulation are going to be even worse, then obviously this can't be a part of the tribulation. Because again, we've had it worse. We've had bubonic plague, we've had Ebola, we had the Spanish flu, we've had the smallpox outbreak a couple hundred years ago. So this is not the worst. It's made worse because of the effect on our lives, mostly due to the fact that the world is much more connected now and we are all suffering at a fairly equal rate. But don't confuse the social aspect and the social devastation with the actual physical devastation. 3 in 1,000 people are going to die. That's bad, but it has and will be considerably worse than that. In fact, I would say that more people are going to be harmed by our reaction to the virus than the actual virus itself. The second reason that this isn't the tribulation or especially the fourth horseman is because in order for the fourth horseman to ride, well, logically, the first three horsemen would have to ride, and we haven't seen them yet. The first three horsemen, again, if you want to go deeper into this, go to the blog, but the first horseman is the Antichrist, the rider on the white horse. The second rider is the rider on the red horse, who represents a war and death and killing. And the third rider is the black horse of economic famine. Those riders haven't come yet. The Antichrist isn't here. The Antichrist is not on any kind of throne yet. No matter what you might think of our current politicians, none of them, as bad as they are, none of them are the Antichrist. The Antichrist hasn't appeared on the scene. And the tribulation does not start until the Antichrist comes on the scene. And then you have the red horse, and then you have the black horse, and then you'll have the pale horse, the fourth horse of death and pestilence. The act that kicks off the tribulation, that starts that seven-year period, according to the book of Daniel, is the covenant, the seven-year covenant that the Antichrist establishes or enforces with Israel. Some folks say it'll be a peace treaty that he starts with Israel for 7 years. The Bible doesn't say that. It just says a covenant. It doesn't say anything about a peace treaty. It might be a peace treaty, but the Bible doesn't say that. It just says that he confirms or enforces a covenant with the many, which is a word for Israel. That's in Daniel chapter 9. So the bottom line is, until you see a world figure establishing or enforcing some type of seven-year agreement with Israel, then the tribulation does not start, and that has not happened yet. So we are not in the tribulation. Let me repeat that. This is not the tribulation. So if this is not the apocalypse, what is it? What are we going through from a biblical standpoint? Well, I'm going to give you my opinion here, and I want to make it clear that this is an opinion. I think it's a biblically informed opinion, but it is just my point of view. What I talked about previously with the tribulation and the fourth horseman, that's biblical fact. You can look and see easily that these events we're going through do not fit the biblical model for the tribulation. So we're definitely 100% not there. But so that's what it is. As far as what it is, again, it's a speculation on my part, but I believe it's Bible-based speculation. And there are two things that it is. I think it depends on your standpoint, from God's standpoint and from the standpoint of Satan and his minions and the powers of evil. From God's standpoint, I believe this is a warning shot and a practice exam. I think it's a warning shot to the secular world, and it's a practice exam, a practice test for Christians. And from the satanic point of view, this is a dress rehearsal and a blueprint. And I'm going to explain what I mean by that. For the secular world, coronavirus, COVID-19 is a warning. Maybe our final warning or one of our last warnings. Why do I believe that? Because I look in the Bible and I see God's pattern when God judges. God always warns people before he institutes his final judgment. And of course, the final judgment on this world is going to be that period of time, the tribulation. And this is a warning, I believe. If you look through the Bible, God, before he executes judgments, he warns us, because God does not take pleasure in judging us. God has to judge because he is righteous. He has to judge because it would be unjust for him not to judge our sin, but he does not want people to suffer. God's desire is that all men and women come to believe in him and become his children and dwell with him forever. That's the entire meaning of life. That's why God created us in the first place, is for us to dwell with him forever. So the last thing he wants to do is, you know, judge us and punish us. But if we give him no alternative, then he has to do it because he is a righteous and just God. But he gives us every opportunity. If you look at the first huge judgment, the flood, in chapter 6 and 7, what does God do? God, in Genesis chapter 6, God declares a flood. He says he's going to wipe out the entire earth. But he doesn't do it immediately. He commissions Noah to build an ark, and it takes him 120 years. Even though God said that that world was due for judgment, he gave them 120 years of mercy to give them an opportunity to repent, to turn back to him. You had Noah there preaching to them for 120 years. They saw him building this ark for 120 years. They knew. There was no doubt in anyone's mind of what God was going to do. They just chose not to obey him, so God had no choice but to fulfill his word and flood the earth. But he wanted everyone to be saved, and he gave them an opportunity. Another great example is in the book of Judges, which I'm actually studying right now in a separate Bible study with some friends. The book of Judges shows how God has worked with the children of Israel, his chosen people, over and over again to try to get them to turn back to him and not suffer the judgment that he knew was going to come to them. In fact, in order to really understand this, we need to go back to Deuteronomy, the last book of Moses. The book of Deuteronomy ends with God essentially telling the children of Israel, after their 40 years of wandering in the wilderness and all their disobedience, God said, look, you guys are going to finally disobey me. You have my laws. You have my commandments. I'm going to send you into the promised land, but you're going to fail. You're going to start worshiping false gods. You're going to start worshiping the gods of other nations. And as a punishment for that, I'm going to have them take you into captivity. He told them this in Deuteronomy. He told them this before they even got to the promised land. He warned them that this experiment with the children of Israel was going to fail. But God didn't immediately take them into captivity, even though he knew that would be his ultimate judgment. He gave them hundreds of years to turn back to him. In Judges, there's a pretty bleak pattern where God blesses Israel. They do well. Then they get complacent. They turn to other gods. And God sends other nations to come in and start harassing them and tormenting them. And then they turn back to him. And then God raises up a judge or a leader. That's what judge is. It's not judge in the sense that, you know, we think of one in a court with a, you know, with a gavel. The judge was a leader. God would raise up a leader, and the leader would turn them back to God, and they would do well for a while, and then they would go back to worshiping the gods of the other nations, and God would send the other nations to punish them. Now, they wouldn't go into captivity. This was just a warning shot. God would say, this is what's going to happen to you. These nations that are harassing you are a sample, a small sample of what it will be like if you don't ultimately turn back to me. And then they would turn back to God, and God would raise up a judge or a leader over them, and they would do well, and then they would fall right back into the same pattern. So Judges, in the book of Judges, God keeps giving them a sample, a warning, a lesser version of the ultimate judgment. And that in order to warn them, because he did not want them to go into captivity, even though he knew that was their ultimate fate. And he is doing that with this world. This coronavirus, COVID-19, is a warning. It is a minor version of what it's going to be like in the actual tribulation. This, when the tribulation actually happens, when the fourth horseman finally rides, and the pestilence that he's going to bring with him is going to make coronavirus look like a picnic. You're talking three in 1,000 people dying. Multiply that exponentially, and that's what it's going to be like. So if you think this is bad now, this is nothing compared to the tribulation. So I think that's what God's telling a secular world. This is a warning. If you do not want to deal with what you're dealing with now on an exponentially worse level, turn to me. I think 9/11 was another warning shot. 9/11 was a military warning shot, because it was the same thing. It was relatively minor. Again, I don't want to make light of the lives that were lost. 3,000 people died, but that's relatively low compared to people who die in wars. You know, World War I and World War II and Vietnam and Korea, we lost millions of people. 3,000 people died at 9/11. I think that was a warning shot of God saying, this is what the Red Horseman's going to be like. So a minor version of it. So if you turn back to me, this is your warning shot. And I believe this is God's warning shot about what the tribulation will be like, again, on an exponentially lower level, because he's warning us. He wants the secular world to turn back to him. But if they don't turn to God, God cannot be blamed. When the tribulation does kick off and people say, God, why are you letting this happen to us? You know, you didn't warn us. God will say, actually, I did. Remember coronavirus? That was your warning. Remember 9/11? That was your warning. That was your opportunity to turn back to me. That was me giving you a minor version of the events that you're experiencing now. That was your chance. You can't say that God was unfair. When God finally judges this world in the tribulation, no one can say, God, you didn't warn us. We didn't know it was coming. Yeah, we absolutely did. So that's for the secular world. But to the Christian world, this is a practice exam. This is a test to see where we are as it relates to God. Where is our focus? Where is our faith? What are we focused on? Are we focused on the tangible world, our financial status, our jobs, our careers, our homes? Or are we focused on the spiritual, on the intangible? Are we focused on God? Because here's the thing, if you're a Christian and you're focused only on your tangible life, your stuff, your wood, hay, and stubble, then you're going to lose faith right now. Because your stocks are being devastated. Your 401k plan is being wiped out. You're losing tons of value. You may be losing your job. You may lose your home. So what are you going to do? Are you going to blame God and be more interested in the stuff you have as opposed to your spiritual life? Or are you going to take a step back and realize that our short lives here, the 70, 80 years that we are on this earth, are nothing compared to eternity, and that we should be storing up our treasure in heaven and not being focused on our treasure here on earth? Where are we putting our focus? Where are we putting our time and effort? Are we interacting with other people to build disciples, which Jesus commanded us to do in the Great Commission, go out and build disciples? Are we doing that? Or are we too busy worrying about our retirement plan and buying cars and houses and advancing our careers and worrying about those kind of things? Which, again, nothing wrong with that, but it's where is your true focus? And I'm going to just make a confession here. When I'm not just preaching to you, I'm preaching to myself too. This is something that I've had to deal with, because As you know, if you've been following along, I have not been diligent about keeping up these podcasts. I committed to doing these weekly. I have not been doing them weekly. Why? Because I've been caught up in the physical world with my finances, with my job, with my kids and, you know, my wife and my house and all those sorts of things. And I have let this podcast, Faith by Reason, I've let it lag because I've placed greater importance on the physical world, on my tangible treasure, than I have on my spiritual treasure. And again, I'm confessing that to you right now. I've been wrong. And this has been my opportunity to take a step back and look at it because, you know, I was invested in the stock market, not heavily, thank God. But, you know, the stocks that I did own have been not wiped out, but they've been devastated. I mean, my portfolio does not look anywhere near as good as it did just 2 months ago when I was riding high along with everyone else. And I look at my portfolio and I'm like, wow, look at all the value I've lost. But I have to remember that that's not where my treasure is. My treasure is in heaven. And if I want to build up my treasure, my retirement plan for heaven should be more important than my retirement plan for when I'm 60 and, you know, have maybe a couple decades to live. I should focus more on my retirement plan and putting up treasure in heaven where I'm going to be for eternity. And you, as a Christian, you need to do the same thing. Are you building up your treasures in heaven? Are you doing what God called you to do? Because if you're a Christian, there's a calling on your life. If you don't know what it is, here's a good time to try to figure it out, to pray and ask God, what are the gifts he's given you? What does he want you to do? And if you pray and put God first, put yourself behind that and just do God's will, he will reveal to you, if you don't already know, what your purpose is. And you need to do that because that's what's going to build your true retirement plan, not the stocks you've invested in, not your bonds and your treasury bills and your homes or anything financial that you have. Your true retirement plan is in heaven, and that's what you need to focus on. So this is a test to see, where are you going to focus? Are you going to focus on your financial and lose faith and live in fear? Or are you going to focus on God and start working to put treasure in heaven? Is this going to be your wake-up call? How are you doing on your exam? That's what, you know, if when you were in school, you know that a practice exam was what your teacher, your professor gave you as kind of an evaluation to see where you are with the material you've been given. Do you fully understand it? So you don't pass or fail based on the practice test, but it tells you where you are. So the question to you, Christian, is what is this practice exam telling you about where you are? And as I was saying, with me, I wasn't doing as well as I thought I was doing. I look back and say, you know what? I could be doing more. I have not been putting God first. I've been putting my tangible life first, and I need to correct that. And I think you need to do that same evaluation and see how this practice exam is affecting you. And lastly, from the satanic point of view, this is, again, like I said, a dress rehearsal and a blueprint. If you have been following Faith by Reason, you know that my take on the beginning of the tribulation, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, I don't believe they are from God. I don't believe that Revelation 6 is the beginning of the judgments of God. Now, most commentators do. Most commentators believe that Revelation 6 is the beginning of God judging the earth. I don't. I actually believe that the riders and those four horsemen are actually from Satan. I believe the four horsemen are part of a false apocalypse from Satan. Why do I believe this? Well, if you look at what Satan's goal is, Satan's ultimate goal is to have his Antichrist, his false Christ, sit on the throne in Jerusalem and rule the world. He wants to be, again, as a false Christ. And in order to have a false Christ, you need to have a false apocalypse. The whole world, religious and secular, is expecting an apocalypse. It's not just Christians who know that judgment is coming. The whole world knows that they are due for judgment. If you look at our media, if you look at a lot of TV shows and movies are all set in some type of apocalyptic situation where, you know, the world has been devastated. You look at their movies about, you know, asteroids crashing to the earth, you know, like movies like Armageddon and The Day After Tomorrow. And you look at TV shows like The Walking Dead, and there's just tons of them that are apocalyptic. It's a very, very popular genre because I think we all unconsciously know that we are due for a judgment. So when it happens, we also know that that judgment is coming from a higher power, a moral higher power. So Satan will use that to his advantage. He's going to create a false apocalypse, not from God, but from Satan. Since he controls the beginning of that apocalypse, he can control how it ends. And when he ends that apocalypse by saying, first of all, blaming God for the apocalypse that he caused, and using his man, the Antichrist, to end it and be looked upon as the savior. So the first horseman, the Antichrist, is obviously from Satan. The second horseman of war and killing, that's going to be satanically inspired. The economic horseman of the black horseman who is going to bring about economic devastation and famine of due to economic lack. Well, that's Satan can easily do that with our stock markets. And finally, the pestilences. We can create all kinds of diseases in the laboratories. I'm not going to go into any conspiracy theories about whether or not the COVID-19 was created in the laboratory. I'm not going there. But I'm saying that ability, Satan has that ability. There are already many devastating diseases that have been created in the lab. So Satan can mimic all of these things, and he can make all these things happen. I believe that's what he'll be doing in the first part of the tribulation. Actually, before the tribulation and during the first part, that will be Satan's opportunity to create his false apocalypse and put his man on the throne. But keep in mind that Satan is not like God. He is not all-powerful. He is not omnipresent. The only way for Satan to enforce his worldwide dictatorship is to have it done by force. He cannot make us do it through his own supernatural power. He's not powerful enough. But one thing that I believe 9/11 and the coronavirus has shown him is that if he introduces a crisis, he doesn't have to enforce his dictatorship on us. We will voluntarily put ourselves under subjugation. Look at what happened at 9/11. At 9/11, you had the United States, the freest country in the world, the most independent, the most freedom-minded people, the rugged individualists. What did we do when those planes crashed into the Twin Towers? Overnight, we gave up a ton of our freedoms voluntarily without any arm twisting. We just said, here, we're afraid, we've been attacked, take our freedoms away. And they're still gone. I mean, our freedom of speech was curtailed. Our freedom of privacy, our right to privacy is gone. Before 9/11, the government could not spy on us. It was illegal for the government to spy on us. Now, the government can read your emails, they can listen to your phone conversations, and they can put cameras up everywhere, and we have no problem with it. Overnight, we just went from the freest country in the world to a country that just gladly handed over a ton of our freedoms, and no one made a peep about it. So Satan knows that, hey, if I just start any kind of military campaign, I can get Americans to give up all of their freedoms. And if America, the most independent-minded country, will do it, then of course the rest of the world will fall into line. Now, so that's the blueprint for the military. What has coronavirus shown Satan? Coronavirus has shown Satan that if he introduces a pestilence into the world, we will give up even more of our freedoms. We've given up our freedom of mobility and gathering together. We have put ourselves on lockdown. Like I said, in my state, we are not allowed to leave our homes, and nobody's protesting it. Everywhere, no one's defying it. We're all sitting in our homes. I don't know what's going on in the big city. I live in the suburbs of a major city. I have no idea what's going on in that city. I can't go anywhere near it. So Satan now knows that, hey, if I introduce a pestilence, people will gladly stay exactly where I want them to be. They'll stay under my control, and they will subjugate themselves, and they will be in a situation where the only information they get is not eyewitness information. I don't know what's going on outside of my home. All I know is what I see on TV, what I read on the internet, and if that doesn't scare you, if you're not scared by the fact that the only information you're getting right now is from the media, then you weren't just listening to what I said. You no longer know what's going on in the world. The only thing you know is what the media wants you to know right now. That is truly frightening. And again, this is a disease that is only going to kill 0.3%. Imagine if there was a disease that killed, oh, I don't know, 5%. If a 0.3% disease, killing disease makes us lock ourselves in our house, a 5%, a disease that kills exponentially more, like 5% of the population, will stay in our homes and paint our windows black and not even look outside. Hell, if Satan comes up with a disease that kills 20%, He doesn't have to worry about marching us off to concentration camps. We will gladly pack our bags and march to the concentration camps ourselves. This Satan now knows he has a blueprint for how to get the world to subjugate themselves. He doesn't need to use a military or a police force. We will do it ourselves. We are doing it right now. Look around you. We are all obeying. We can't even go to church. You know you can no longer go to your church. And no church that I've noticed is even protesting it. We have lost our First Amendment. We're giving up our First Amendment right to assemble religiously. We cannot. We are no longer assembling for our church services, our religious freedoms, our most basic freedom. And no one made us do it. There's no one with an AK-47 or an M16 standing outside of your door saying you can't go to church. We're doing it ourselves. We are self-quarantining, and we're only a step away from being having self-imposed concentration camps. Satan has his blueprint now for how to implement his final world dictatorship. And he knows that he doesn't have to do anything by force. Just introduce a big enough crisis and we will do it to ourselves. All right, I'm going to wrap this up because I'm at the 30-minute point. So just as a summary, coronavirus, COVID-19 is not the tribulation. We are not in the tribulation. It is not the fourth horseman of the apocalypse. What we are in, this is a sign of the apocalypse. It is a warning shot, perhaps the final warning shot. I believe we're getting closer because I think the closer we get to the end, the more devastating the warning shots has to be for God to get our attention. And this one's pretty bad. We're not only going to get sick and die, many of us, me again, in a big picture, not dramatically, but there will be sickness and death. And our economy is devastated. We're going to a recession, quite possibly a depression. And I don't think it can get much worse than this. I don't think a warning shot could get much worse than this. So this might be our last warning shot, the last chance the world has to pull together. And for Christians, this is your time to take stock of your life and ask yourself, what are you focusing on? Are you focused on your stuff? Are you focused on your eternal life? Are you focused on your retirement plan on earth or your eternal retirement plan? And finally, for Satan, this is his dress rehearsal, his chance to put all the pieces in place. He knows how to do it now. He has his blueprint, and he's ready now. He is ready to implement his false apocalypse that, again, you can read about in my section on the tribulation. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up. Thanks for listening. I hope this was informative. I know it probably wasn't terribly comforting for you, but I think the only comfort I can give you is to tell you again that this is not the end. We will get past this. This will not wipe out all life on Earth. We will get back to some sense of normalcy in the next few months. It's tough. Don't get me wrong. It's very difficult, but we will come out of this. And hopefully you will come out of this with a stronger faith and a bigger commitment to discipling others and making disciples of all as Jesus commanded us to do. And you'll have more treasure in heaven. So, That's the comforting note I can give you. And with that, I'm going to wrap up. Again, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Please leave me your comments. And as I said, I've been convicted myself, and I will make these, I will recommit myself to getting these podcasts out weekly and getting that Revelation series of videos kicked off pretty soon. And until then, please subscribe to Faith by Reason by putting your email into the right navigation bar so you get the podcasts and blogs and soon-to-be videos when they are posted. And I will talk to you next week.